Check two.
Blog Talk Radio.
Dedicate our lives to this sport. We do thousands of sit-ups in camp. We run hundreds of miles, you know, for the ones that take it serious. And we just dedicate ourselves fully to our craft, man. We watch tape. We attitude. We moody, and we go into that fight and to land on the line.
What's going on, boxing fans? This is the Rope-A-Dope Radio Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Carlson. We are live on a Wednesday night. Hope everybody's doing okay. Hopefully the cut on Caleb Plant's face is doing okay. There's a lot to talk about. We're going to deep dive. Well, it's not going to be a deep dive, but we are going to dive deep, is what I meant to say, into a variety of items, obviously inside the ring. We will have a little recap from the PBC on FS1 prospects-driven show on Saturday and Sunday. And, of course, this weekend, we're going to have a preview and prediction segment for the heavyweight title fight, multiple titles, right? Anthony Joshua, God, I cannot talk, versus Oleksandr Usyk. Joshua? Is that what I just said? I'm just joshing you? Usyk and Joshua. It'll be nice to see the UK strong out there in a large stadium, that's for sure. We know Sweet Caroline is coming on right before the main event. We know it's going to take about 35 minutes for the ring entrances to take place. And I work nights a lot of the time, so, you know, right when they're getting in the ring, I'll have to go to work. But that's okay. It's going to be an interesting fight. Usyk has that jab, has that movement, has the pedigree to give Anthony Joshua some problems. But the weight, you know, the weight, not just the weight difference, but because, you know, actually it looks like Anthony Joshua's continued to trim down. I don't know exactly if it's just more shape than actually weight, meaning, you know, I don't expect him to come in at 232 or anything like that. But as we saw a little bit, you know, it, not just style-wise, but, you know, the weight-wise and the look of his body, how he built up his body or built it down. Now, that doesn't make sense. But he's kind of slimming out a little bit, maybe looking for a little bit more mobility, maybe not having to be so bulky, you know. So those, all that weight, you know, muscles, obviously you need oxygen and whatnot. So weight is not just the Usyk side, right? And, of course, we need to see the weigh-in. You know, for both of them, really. But obviously, Usyk, it kind of means a little bit more because he's going way up in weight. But it should be an interesting fight. We definitely will have a preview and predictions segment. And then yesterday, Canelo and Caleb Plant have their presser to kick off the fight in Showtime randomly. It just got in there, you know. It was reported massively. By so many different sources that Fox had it. I think even Plant mentioned, if I remember correctly, Fox in some of that back and forth with the negotiations. I think I'm right about that. But either way, Showtime jumps up. And, man, it's time to hear some eating some crow with Eddie Hearn and Bob Arum and some of these media members part-time in full that just took their word and ran with it. Showtime is dead. That's what they were saying. But either way, not to get too far off topic, but we had some words in some hands exchanged. Wasn't a fist that landed per se, right? It looked like a slap. Actually, Caleb Plant looked like he missed the shot live, but when you see it slowed down and you see it, you know, you see the mark, you see the slow motion stills, Plant definitely landed a nice little slap. Canelo fired back. There was a cut on a cheek, yada, yada, yada. We'll get into some of that. The question that kind of lingers, is Canelo not shook up, but he said it's personal now. And is Caleb Plant, is their question really, is Caleb Plant in Canelo's head a little bit or not? You know, or no, maybe that's just nonsense and whatever. So we do have a variety of things to talk about. Of course, we're going to go over the current fight news as well, whether it's the WBC, I guess jealous of the WBA and all these announcements. They announced some eliminators and mandatory challengers and whatnot. So we'll go over some current fight, you know, news. And of course, we'll deeper in the show, we'll end the show with the Twitter segment where we read, you know, the tweet of the week. We may read some fanboy stuff that kind of makes you chuckle. And then some media members behaving like fanboys. Sometimes we got to call them out, too, in the Twitter segment. But if this is your first time listening to the Ropadope Radio Podcast, welcome. It streams live right here on blogtalkradio.com/Ropadope Radio. However, you don't have to go to Blog Talk and Rope It Open, download the show directly there, or listen to the browser if you don't want to. You can find the platform on Apple Podcasts, on iHeartRadio, Player FM, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spreaker, and a whole lot of other places, by the way. We're also part of the Grueling True Sports Podcast Network. While you're at it, why don't you head on over to thegruelingtruth.com. Whole lot of variety of stuff there. And one more thing, if you're thinking about cutting the cord or you're not quite happy, I got something for you. It's called DirecTV Stream. The prices start as low as $69.99 a month. It's the best of live TV and on-demand. All your apps in one place with access to over 7,000 apps. No annual contract. No hidden fees. And if you upgrade to the Choice or Ultimate, that automatically gets you HBO Max for 3 months. You also get to enjoy regional sports networks with no available additional fees. God, what am I doing? And then the Premier Package, that gives you HBO Max, and here's where the boxing fan comes in. The Premier gives you Showtime as well. It's already included, which Showtime has the best schedule this year, so something to think about, boxing fans. DirecTV Stream. Okay, so, you know, we will get in, like I mentioned, to some recap, probably a little later in the show. Preview, but talk about those PBC on FS1 cards back-to-back. You know, for what they were pretty good cards, you know, for what they were. They were announced kind of with like 2 weeks to go. Of course, you know, the ticket sales didn't do well. Not that it would do great anyway when it comes to prospect stuff. But the late notice and all that, I think they were back-to-back in Bakersfield, California, if I remember correctly. But they were good shows. And, you know, we had Jake Donovan on last week, and he talked about, you know, maybe these FS1 cards will be in the fall because there was 12 of them per year on the normal deal. So maybe we'll see a lot more of those FS1 cards in the fall to close, because I believe they have either two or one Fox show, you know, primetime still there. I wouldn't doubt if November 6th is a, it's a Fox card, but they'll probably have college football on. So maybe the prelim would be an FS1. Anyway, I don't know. But, yeah, so we'll talk about that, but you know, I do want to discuss the preview and prediction segment for Joshua and Alexander Usyk and whatnot, and talk about this Canelo Plant stuff overall and, you know, just a variety of stuff, you know. So just talking about the presser yesterday, and, you know, Canelo and Caleb have kind of gone back and forth a little bit here and there on Twitter, on good old boxing Twitter, and it means more when there's a fight signed. You know, don't get me wrong, a lot of stuff trends and you know, is like a big deal inside a very small knit community on Twitter for boxing, and it, you know, it's fun or whatever, but man, over the last year, really since COVID hit, we've had a lot of Twitter fights that haven't, you know, they talk a big game and then nothing happens, you know, so it is kind of nice when, you know, going back and forth on social media does hype the fight to an extent, no doubt, but when they're actually signed to fight, it, you know, it helps, right? But, you know, when you look at this, so the presser happened. We'll get into the Showtime stuff in a little bit because that was a surprise that they now have the fight. But and you wonder, are they going to have another pay-per-view with Tank then? Or is Tank going to be on a Fox pay-per-view now? Is that the switch around? I don't really – I doubt it, but I don't know. It's just something to think about. And maybe now, you know, it'll be December for Tank's fight instead of October. You'd assume anyway. Unless they plan on doing that thing on CBS, wouldn't that be great? Anyway, right away, and they obviously should have had security. Now, we do see plenty of fights that both at the beginning of it, you see this in boxing a lot, especially at the PBC events, that they both get announced and then they do kind of a stare off and then they go back to it. And maybe they need to be pulled away. But, you know, generally nothing happens. You know, not this time, though. There was a lot of some back and forth amongst each other. And then obviously Canelo pushed Caleb. And it was a push. You know what I mean? It wasn't just kind of a fake push. He pushed him pretty well. Instead of Caleb coming back, like super fast with it, he kind of walked back and then slapped him with the left hand. And like I said, live, it actually did appear that he missed and then got countered, but that was not the case. He slapped Canelo decently. I'm not going to say it would have won an award for the best slap, right? Or you know, it was a slap box move. And you know, it is what it is. Supposedly, the cut didn't come from a punch. Here we are talking ref stuff inside the fight and whatnot, you know, as if it's a fight. But it did, the way they tell it, it was because the glasses, there was like, obviously, you know, Canelo came back and tried and threw something back at him. And then, you know, you could kind of see Plant, like, kind of move to the side or whatever. And then they kind of got locked up. And then finally got, you know, it got broken up. But it sounds like something happened to where the glasses actually made more of a scratch than a full-on huge cut or anything like that. I mean, luckily, you know, it wasn't above the eye or something like that, because then you look and you'd be like, wow, it doesn't matter how it happened. You know, that would be bad. So, and it was hard not to think right after. I think I tweeted, like, did he just play himself? Did Caleb Plant just play himself right now? Because, man, that would suck. Right at the presser getting cut, right? Man, that would just suck, dude. But it does kind of, when I start to see some of the slow motion footage and the stills, excuse me, it does kind of seem like that was the case, that because you could see it was right where the glasses were, and they were kind of tied up with each other, too. So either way, whenever you see some blood, you know, at a presser, it's like, what just happened, dude? And there is some still shots where Plant's kind of saying that to himself. That's what it appears to, you know. But after, when they both sat down, you know, it does seem like it seemed kind of legit. But it definitely made for a lot of action on social media. I mean, Canelo's name was trending hours later. You know, at seventh for a while. I checked, like a couple hours later, I checked, and it was still trending. So for a presser, especially, you know, Canelo, he draws a big crowd, as we know. He's the number one name in boxing, especially, you know, over here in the States. But he's generally pretty quiet, you know, and from time to time, you know, we've seen him say stuff. I was born ready, you know, at the weigh-in with Mayweather. Of course, some stuff back and forth, you know, with Golovkin and Andre. And here's the funny thing. You know, he's saying motherfucker to Andre. But then when Caleb Plant says it, all of a sudden he's talking about his mom. And it's like, well, hold on, dude. Hold on, you know. Caleb Plant's wife, Jordan, was heard saying we're in America, not Mexico. A lot of people are talking about that, and sure, that could come across as like a super ignorant statement. I really don't know the background with that, but it also could be like, hey, dude, we don't mean it like that here. When you say mother effer, we don't mean it like that. We're not talking about your mom, dude. You know what I mean? It's funny. He can say it, but when it said, you know, when it was said to him, it pissed him off. But either way, and they called him a cheat, and they were getting into it, you know, beyond the slap box, and they were getting into it at the presser near the end. And so that was fun. You know, that was fun. I got to say, for a presser, that was good. And, you know, if you get pushed, there's a chance that you're going to come back at someone with a push or whatever. We've seen people grab each other's necks, yada, 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 and people come between. It didn't look orchestrated, I'll say that. I don't believe it looked too orchestrated. It looked like there was some real emotion. So that's the question. Is Caleb Plant, the hick from French League? No, I'm just kidding. That's Larry Bird. But the dude from Nashville, right? Or outside of Nashville, wherever the hell he grew up. I think it was outside of Nashville. But either way, is he in Canelo's head a little bit? Because we rarely see, I mean, Canelo admitted. He's like, no, I'm good, but this is personal. I mean, I'm going to knock you out in, what he'd say, by the eighth round or something like that. I mean, Canelo generally doesn't do this. He'll tell some jokes when he's got, you know, lets his guard down and whatever. But that, I got to wonder if this isn't working pretty decently for Caleb Plant, getting this guy pissed off, getting him to try to do some of the stuff he was doing against Billy Joe, which is just going for bombs. Instead of trying to break somebody down, because that's going to be the name of the game to that fight. Canelo breaking down Plant, walking him down, trying to cut off the ring, and then obviously Plant, you know, with the movement, with the jab, with the speed, he's going to have the pot shot and from time to time counter. But we'll get into the actual predictions and all that later. But I think normally when this stuff does, you know, happens, I don't really look at it too much. I mean, I'll look at it and laugh and, or, you know, say something on Twitter or whatever, but you just don't see Canelo get this pissed. Because remember, he's the one who pushed first. So it was smooth by Canelo to well, he didn't duck that, you know, but he did counter back. So, and, you know, anytime you leave and you're not the one getting cut, it looks bad on the other guy. So it actually, I think it kind of just got the emotions going for the fan base as well. But I think you could make a minor argument that Canelo, and then all fight week was just in his ear. I think you can make an argument that we got something here, potentially, where Canelo's going to be, of course he's going to try to knock him out or whatever, but like I said, throwing some really, really hard shots. Because I don't know. Of course he's going to do that, but you know what I mean? By really, okay, I'm going to work you to the body and try to just one shot punch you to the head. That's not the smartest way consistently, because you're not piling up points. Not that Canelo needs the points on the scorecards, as we know, but you know what I mean? So it was interesting. It was funny. It felt real. They should have had security there, but then again, that wouldn't have happened, you know? So I don't know. I really, it was pretty funny. It was pretty funny to me. It was good, though. Like I said, it trended. It got people. If you don't like Plant, you really don't like him now. If you're a Canelo fanboy, you hate Plant. And anybody that says anything positive about Plant, I've noticed that on Boxing Twitter with the fanboys. But it definitely livens stuff up. And then Showtime getting this pay-per-view, man. They've had a great year. And a year that's been, you know, at times really good and then at times just stuck in neutral. Right, like grinding the gears, trying to, should we try to find reverse? you know, trying to get out of this gear. We're stuck between third and fourth. It's been a weird COVID and postponements and cancellations. And if Andrew Holyfield and Riddick Bowe, and we're going to talk a little bit about that. It sounds like, well, two things. Holyfield, some of the quotes from frickin' Kavanaugh on Holyfield is just ridiculous. And then now that it got bad press, it sounds like Riddick Bowe is not going to fight. Man, we thought Holyfield's little highlight on the Mitz tape was bad. That little tape of Riddick Bowe, I guess you could call him moving and shuffling, but not like Ali. I mean, it looked like he didn't have his equilibrium almost. It was pretty sad looking at that. And, you know, he's not in shape like Holyfield, you know, obviously. So, I mean, who is at that age? You know what I mean? Like, it's crazy, especially athletes, because some athletes do blow up after their careers just because they led such a disciplined life. But for Showtime to get this pay-per-view, it does – I wonder, so are we going to then for sure get a December Gervonta pay-per-view? Or is he going to do a Fox pay-per-view? I wonder with that. But that was a surprise just because, like I said, it was universally, you know, reported that, that Showtime or that Fox got it. So this is a big coup, you know, for Showtime. And Steven Espinoza and the whole crew over there, they, I mean, like I said, it's time to eat some crow, media and part-time media that just parroted what Eddie Hearn especially, but even Bob Arum, he said that a couple times. But Eddie, I mean, when you look back at some of these quotes from Eddie and just in general, some of these guys he's got around him, you know, it's pretty crazy, man. It's pretty crazy. And you know, it's one thing to be like, oh, someone was wrong, no big deal. But when you're competitors and you're saying all this stuff about another competitor in the media – isn't balancing it out. They're not balancing it out. And now you look at, you know, DAZN in the U.S., and there's tumbleweed. Oh, there goes one right now. A tumbleweed just went by. Like, it's like, what the hell happened to the 16 bangers and four absolute monsters we were going to get? We were going to get, so 16 fights here, 12 bangers, pay-per-view level bangers, whatever that means, because, you know, we usually don't see, you know, stack cards on pay-per-views. But then he said four just, all, you know. And don't get me wrong. DAZN, I said it then. The spring of 2019 in the fall, the way they closed. Second and fourth quarter was phenomenal. Shit, even first quarter, for me, they won the first quarter. They had a great March, too. But ever since, I mean, I said this before. Imagine Heyman or Arum not having a card since May. Could you imagine what the media would be saying, and by the way, Eddie Hearn would be saying. So in a lot of ways, I love me some Eddie Hearn. Don't get me wrong. I think he is good for the sport in a lot of ways. But you got to call it for what it is. And listen to some of these clips in the last few years. It's crazy.
These other networks and platforms are going to be looking at boxing like HBO did. I expect Showtime to leave the sport in 12 months because it's too ferocious, it's too competitive that people like, not Steven Espinoza, but the people above him will look at boxing and go, this is expensive. And I'm not sure it's generating the business that we need it to. Just like HBO did. It wasn't a decision of P&L's, it was just the bosses looked at it and said, this market's gone crazy, everything's too expensive, and we're not delivering the numbers. So goodbye.
Bob Arum.
Yeah. I think Bob Arum said that. I think Showtime have a very limited future in boxing.
And like I said, this isn't just taking random shots at Eddie, but some of the stuff, it's really the press, too. You know, when you're talking about your competitors, but then you also say we need to cross the street and we can't use that as an excuse, it's a combination of you're talking out of one side of your mouth, but then saying something else. I really want to work, you know, with these companies, but they're going to be out of business. You know what I mean? So, I mean, even here, this next audio, he literally lies about Showtime and doesn't get checked. Multiple interviews like this.
I think at the moment we're in this crazy place where DAZN and ESPN are spending so much money. Showtime, in my opinion, you know, I don't want to sound like a hater, but I see them leaving boxing because because just like HBO, but they're not a sports platform. You know, they're not an OTT platform as well. Well, they don't even have that facility. So,
they're not an OTT platform. They don't even have that facility. I mean, let's not forget, and the reason why I don't forget is because I had a sponsorship for it. But actually, if you look at HBO and Showtime, and what is this, 2016 or something like that? I can't remember the exact dates. But on they had a deal with Showtime on Hulu Plus that you could stream the live channels. This is before you could really stream a live fight. Because on HBO, you had to wait. If you had the app or whatever, you had to wait for the fights. You know, sometimes it'd be Monday or Tuesday till the fight was like that. And same with Showtime for a while as far as an app. But on Hulu Plus, they had it to where you could stream a live fight when it's happening, a live fight, you know, with Hulu Plus on their standalone. So to sit there and say you don't have the capability, it's just ridiculous.
Why are they going to be spending all this crazy amount of money on boxing? And I think HBO looked at it, and that's what they said. Versus have gone out of control. The game's gone out of control. We're out.
And why are they going out of control? Remember, this show did as well, right? This show did as well talk about some of the fighters getting overpaid with Al Haymon, the PBC. Now, it's a different structure because he's the manager slash advisor. I think he actually has the manager license. Court, but my point is he's not the promoter, so he's not going to take as much money of your money either. So it's a different, like, especially on pay-per-view, you know, Bob takes 30% of the pay-per-view stuff. We saw that he explained it with the Fury stuff, and even on something he's getting 20% of the purse. My point is, and then you don't have another management fee on top of that, is my point. But it's just, remember, why was it so out of hand with the spending? Why was it so crazy the purse is jumping way out of line? And it did affect some fights with the PBC and their fighters and contracts. And look at the Terrence Crawford contract that they had then when they re-upped. They made it much higher than it was. So why was that? It's because the Zone were the ones spending like crazy, paying $10 million. For Garcia and Vargas. Golovkin alone, and even Canelo, you know, the guy, you know, 35 mil a fight or whatever was crazy if you really think about it. So he's talking about, why would they be here? They're spending so much. And then, you know, a year and a half, 2 years later, he's like, we got to cut these prices, you know. Where was all the media of overspending? You know, it took them all the way. And they set the precedent. That's why Derevchenko held out against Canelo, because he basically got the same money with Golovkin. You know, so we hear all this stuff, but you heard about the Al Haymon overpaying some guys. Maybe they're worth for ticket sales and all that. Sweet, we talked about that. But where was it all this time? They're the ones who made the market go crazy. You know, it's unbelievable how that just gets lost a lot of times. Here's another thing with the I won't even say that. Listen to this audio clip.
Look how the market's changed. Everyone's having to keep up, and eventually they're going to run out of money. So let's let them all run out of money, and then we'll still have our... Everyone's having to keep up, and eventually they're going to run out of money. So let's let them all run out of money, and then we'll still have our...
Everybody's having to keep, people are going to run out of money, then we'll still have our money. But yet, speaking of Mikey Garcia in that ProGrace fight, we've only heard that from a one-sided thing. Now Mikey's come out and said, straight up, talking to Eddie Hearn, putting it out there, saying, we were trying to fight that one. The timing, we were trying to fight Regis. The timing and schedules, this is from BoxingScene.com, by the way. The timing and schedules of DAZN and Matchroom didn't quite fit with the budget. They were required in the dates and stuff, you know. Hearn said he didn't have the budget for that type of fight, especially the distance, you know. It says that, you know, they required a different promotion, more time to promote, more time to build up the fight. They didn't have time to do that, so then that's why, you know, Mikey's fighting a guy that, you know, not a lot of people. people know, obviously. But this is not just to shoot arrows at Eddie. But when he shoots all these arrows, you got to at least find somewhere in the middle. You got to put some context in it. You can't just let them spout out, repeat it. I get putting a quote in your title for clickbait. That's different. You can do that and still balance it out, you know, and that's what we've been missing a lot. And kudos to Showtime, man. They have the best schedule this year. We'll see how they are going to close here. It looks like pretty good. But they've had a great year when, you know, others haven't. Pretty much everybody else, you know. I mean, ESPN's had its moments. Fox has had minor moments, not much. DAZN's, you know, had a good start, but none of them have leveled up to that. So it just, like I said, so many people, media and part-time media, completely parroted that and called for. I mean, I had numerous conversations with people saying, oh, Showtime's done. Showtime's done. And it's just like, well, hold on, dude. You know, but let's not just say they're done. Anyway, and I'm sure some UK, you know, fight fans, I love them, but I'm sure some of these guys that just fanboy for Eddie will say this and that. But these are just facts, dude. He's oversaturated the market. Not even, it's not oversaturated, even though boxing is. We've said this for a while, oversaturated. It just is. Here, before the zone came in, by the way. But, I mean, the money they were paying and offering, it's just silly, you know. But yet, you barely heard it until now you start to hear more because they don't have a schedule here. So anyway, kudos to Showtime, and that's why you got to, you know, throw stuff up on the wall, see what logically sticks business-wide, and, you know, and just kind of give it a fair shake, basically, instead of just running with something and that's it. And I get it. You get access to Arum or you get access more to Eddie or whatever, but you got to call a spade a spade. I'm going to go ahead and bring in John, a great boxing mind, into the fold. I want to get his take on the Canelo plant presser stuff. And also Joshua and Usyk, you know, this Saturday, it's going to be a big stadium fight. I'm really excited to see that UK fan base like we did get to see not long ago, actually. This is going to be even a bigger stadium, obviously. So I'm really excited to see that because they haven't had many. I mean, this is what, their second biggest event over there as far as fans. You know, we've been kind of lucky over here for a while since, what, fans have been in this, like, partially in it since last fall, right, October. I think it was Halloween was the first one with Gervonta in Santa Cruz. And so we got the partials, and then obviously the summer. We've been lucky spring and summer with that. So, yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. All right, I'm going to stop talking here and bring in John to the fold. What's going on, John? How the hell are you, man?
Chris, how's it going? Enjoyed listening to your open, and good to be here. We're finally in the week of a big fight in Joshua Usyk, and as you mentioned, we had some excitement at the Canelo. Hopefully we are going to start building a little momentum after, as you said, this year, except for some highlights that Showtime's had. It just hasn't overall been a good year at all, and we need some hope here for the final quarter of the year.
Yeah, exactly, man. It has just been a hurry up and wait, stop and start, frustrating year in a variety of ways, especially these last couple of months. So we'll get into the ring in just a second, but let's have a little short segment on that, you know, Canelo plant stuff. You rarely see Canelo get that mad, and it didn't look like this was staged and everything like that. I know Eddie Hearn thinks it was, but that makes sense because he's not promoting it. But, and maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm seeing it wrong. Maybe you think it was. But what do you think overall? In live, it kind of did look like Plant missed that slap, but then we saw that he didn't. It was just like a mixture of like, what the hell? Oh my God, someone's cut. You know, it had a little everything, which we're not normally used to seeing out of either of these guys, really. But the question does arise then, has Caleb Plant, to whatever extent, gotten to Canelo in his head just minorly, majorly, if he were to keep it going all fight week? Could he really get something here? What are your thoughts, starting with the actual presser and what went down?
Just whoever does it, I've never really, throughout boxing history, really for me, I've never really been into the bad blood press conference kind of thing. So, you know, my personal take is no matter what promotion's doing these things, and whether it be boxing or, you know, UFC, MMA, I don't really care for these things. So I find it unnecessary. I don't think it was staged per se. We see it happen so much, though. It's really not that out of the ordinary, except for the fact that, you know, Plant did get that cut. I mean, obviously, that's not faked, and that is a bit – that's a bit out of the ordinary. These types of things happen here or there. You know, we've seen some guys actually get punched. You know, Tyson bit Lennox Lewis on the leg in that press conference thing before they were going to fight. And I think, frankly, the way he ended up fighting, you're reading into this one. I'm not reading it as much, but that was an example of what I think you probably could read into, because what he did in the second Holyfield fight and the way he fought against Lewis, I don't think it would be that
right.
much of a stretch that to say Tyson really probably wanted to be out of the fight already. Before the press tour started after the first conference. I'm sorry, but with Mike Tyson's history, he's done that to himself. I don't think that's unfair or an exaggeration. So, you know, once in a while you can read in. I have a little bit of a read in that I think does fit this one for me, what some people were saying about Canelo. And I think this part kind of fits it. You did see Canelo get up in Golovkin's face in the weigh-in of the second fight, rush over to him, which he ended up winning in a very good fight, you know, by a tight decision. He, before that, you know, based on his comments and the fact that he hasn't fought him since, when they were supposed to basically have a third fight, at least with both having the DAZN deal, I think there is something to this, and you can read into this part of it what you want, but the part said yesterday, Canelo feels he's got to react when he's being called a cheater. I think based on that second Golovkin fight, that weigh-in, hasn't fought him since after he beat him when they were supposed to have that third fight with DAZN. I think you can say that Golovkin Canelo feels a need to react when he is called a cheater. You know, from his perspective, you know, the clenbuterol, there's no dispute about this part of it. The test was within the limits for contaminated meat. You know, if you are above a certain level, it can't be that you had that from contaminated meat. There's no dispute that his test was within that. So you can have – people can have what theories they want. You know, there is that problem in Mexico. So I think one theory is Canelo didn't cheat for that fight. He was, you know, got it from the contaminated meat, and that pisses him off when people say he cheated. You know, he was obviously pretty darn well legitimately pissed off at Golovkin around the second fight, and, you know, Plant was calling him cheater yesterday. So in terms of any, like, legit bad blood or reaction, I would say that's probably what this was about. You know, the theory about was logically, I think this proven today, the theory about Canelo misunderstanding thinking Plant said something about his mother doesn't make sense. And I think that was pretty much logically disproven today. So I think Canelo probably does get a little bit aggravated, and this depends on what side of the issue you're on as you think why. You know, some people are going to say he's sensitive because, you know, he's used PEDs and that's why he had a positive test and it ticks him off. And some people are going to look at it and say, well, it was a trace amount of clenbuterol. You can't fake that it had to be within the level for contaminated meat. So when he has fighters that he's given a big payday to, which that can't be disputed. It's like Mayweather was for a long time. You know, now Canelo's the money guy. When he fights you, he is giving you a payday. That just can't be disputed. All these guys are getting their career high payday. So he has commented like that before. And you saw what he said to Andrade at the press conference, you know, after his win over Saunders, which I think, you know, we hear him speaking English now. He speaks English well, really. he says, hey, I'm not going to give you a payday. You just want a payday. So Canelo is very aware of this. He could get ticked off when people are calling him a cheater and he's giving him a payday. That would be maybe my take, but I don't overall put much stock in these press conference things. You know, you do make a good point, though. If a guy like Plant ever could get Canelo mad where it carried over to the ring, I haven't seen that with Canelo. He was aggressive on Golovkin, but in the second fight, but obviously he proved in that fight he could do it strategically, as when he started backing Golovkin up, Golovkin didn't want to stand his ground, so that was a workable strategy. You know, Golovkin fans, a lot of them don't like to talk about that, but the fact is Canelo was right there for him, saying, come on, let's brawl. And, you know,
right.
Golovkin didn't really want any part of the Golovkin became
he didn't use his
match.
Mexican
was,
style. He didn't use his
right,
Mexican
exactly.
style.
I still love that to this day because he was
right.
Mexican style until Canelo
right.
wanted to get down with him. And then all of a sudden, to his fan base, he became the greatest jab master since Muhammad Ali. You know, that still amuses me now because I think a lot of those jabs that he throws, not that he can't have a good one, but flicking again, when he wants to go back to his amateur style and he does, you know, he really, when he feels he's got
yeah.
a significant power advantage over somebody, then he wants to back him up. But, you know, I think with even the first Canelo fight, because he was afraid of getting countered, don't want to diverge, but he was afraid of getting countered by Canelo. You know, he didn't want to be walking in with any Mexican style. That's why there were no body shots. So, you know, it's different when somebody's got some skill and they can hurt you. So what I'm getting to there with the Plant, just in conclusion on that, you know, if you look back, this is not a high-grade opponent, but a guy that sometimes could give people some trouble and usually could get some things done, even though he was crude. You know, this is a fight that wasn't an exciting fight, but if you look at, like, Porky Medina some years ago, even before the USADA guy fight, I mean, he is a guy that's cautious, but he can make you look absolutely ridiculous. I mean, you know, when he just doesn't want to be hit and he's going to fight cautiously. So why I'm saying that is I could see kind of what you're thinking, Chris, if maybe he got Canelo so ticked off that, you know, Canelo was getting just a little more aggressive than usual. I don't think he will, but, you know, maybe that could Plant's going to need all the advantages he can get in this one. You know, Plant can be very elusive when he gets conservative and he just doesn't want to be hit. He can be a guy that's extremely tough to hit. You know, maybe that could even come into play with Canelo. But I don't know, that's going to be tough. I think for this one, I just think it's going to be tough for Plant, not with the talent level so much, but just the experience level. I do have to agree
yeah.
with some of his critics that he just hasn't been in tough enough
mm-hmm.
for this assignment. I mean, I thought maybe they'd have something else before this, but they, like a lot of others, just don't want to risk the Canelo payday. We saw those types of things with Mayweather. We've seen it with Pacquiao. You know, when a guy gets to that level of bringing the payday, people don't want to take the risks nowadays. And, you know, that's going to probably put Plant at some disadvantage. But overall, the press conference thing, I just don't put a lot of stock in it. I don't think it's necessary to hype. You know, being an American, I think people are underestimating because boxing isn't what it used to be in terms of popularity and ratings. They are forgetting over this 5-6 year period that these PBC guys have gotten more exposure than other people. You know, in the U.S. especially, they've just been seen by more other fighters, so they are more marketable in terms of selling fights at this point. I mean, that was part of the idea. I think maybe it hasn't paid off enormously, but it's certainly paid off more than the competitors. So, you know, Caleb Plant for nowadays has been a more viewed fighter than most. So even though Canelo's the biggest draw in boxing and he brings that on his own, I think this is just a fight because of that a lot of people would want to see. I don't think you need to promote it, but I don't think it needs extra hype. I just think Plant getting somewhat known, especially in the U.S. over this PBC exposure for 5-6 years, just being in with somebody like Canelo, I think that's enough to hype this fight.
Yeah, and casuals, if they get interested, sure, some of them will see this clip once they've said, oh, okay, I'm interested. Maybe they'll see it and be like, oh, that pumps me up more or whatever. But also just the commercial run will be interesting, and you know they're going to say something about Undisputed. And anytime a casual hears Undisputed, they're like, now, wait a second, what'd you say? So I can finally figure out who the hell's what at 168. And, you know, obviously once they talk to their hardcore fight fan friend, they'll be like, well, hold on, Benavidez is there, and this, you know, they'll say stuff. But to them, you know, I am interested to see if they can do what Fox does and really market it during college football, during the NFL. We've seen a little bit of that at CBS, but I assume the fact that you're going to put up this kind of money, whatever the purse actually is, but it's a lot. So, you know, I really am interested to see how CBS does that. Not just Showtime, but CBS. How many, you know, what kind of run, you know, what kind of layout they have for this. So it'll be interesting because Stephen Espinoza spoke to that was part of, you know, what helped them, not just the money, but the exposure that it's going to get. And we know Fox, you know, although the last year it's been rough on the Fox main events, it's something well documented here on this show. They do promote the shit out of their fights, you know, and that's, we don't get much of that. And so it always is like, well, I give them credit for that. Ever since they got that deal, they've been promoting the shit out of their fights. So that'll play into it too. But just in general, I'm with you as far as normally I don't really look at this stuff much as anything, but it did. I think it's worth discussing just because of you rarely see Canelo get that freaking mad. And it was a real slap. And there was a weird cut out of nowhere, like you said, just random stuff like that that I could see. I'm not saying it sells pay-per-views, but there's something to it. If you're already kind of on the, you know, on the fence, or you've heard about, oh, I know Canelo, who is he fighting now? This might, you know, bring you over to buy it, or to say, hey, get a group of casuals and let's all throw in on the pay-per-view and whatnot. Heading for this weekend now, we have a fairly big fight, obviously, in the heavyweight division. Anthony Joshua, you know, has faced some solid talent over the years at this weight class. We obviously want to see him with Fury. We wanted to see him with Wilder, who, you know, still would. But in general, you know, he's been kind of out of the big fight ever since because a lot of it was COVID. He's only had one fight since the 2019 Andy Ruiz stuff. It does look like he's continued to somewhat trim down his body a little bit. I've noticed that from the video and photos. I want to see that on the weigh-in, though. Not to say, like I mentioned, I don't see him coming in at 232. But I think he's continuing to say, you know, I don't need to be that bulky. You know, even if it's the same weight, it's just, you know, separated a little bit different, laid out a little different. So I think that's pretty smart, actually. Maybe it'll give him a little bit more mobility, flexibility, whatever. Because we know once you get too big, it stiffens you out, and especially throwing punches and whatnot. On the other side, though, you got a guy who's ultra-skilled in Oleksandr Usyk, a guy who, you know, looks the part as an all-purpose guy and can fight inside, and especially outside or at a distance, at range. The Brees fight was probably the closest. The early part of the Hunter fight was damn good, a brawl, but then he cleared him out pretty good. Otherwise, he separated himself fairly easy, you know, from everybody else, that cruiserweight, that is. Now he's going up, and, you know, when you look at his first two fights, first of all, it's been about a while, let's put it that way. I mean, I know he had an elbow injury and then COVID and blah, 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 but he's only had like two fights in a fair amount of time. So he's putting on weight and maybe putting on weight over time now, this last little bit since his last fight, waiting to see what would happen with the Joshua and Fury and Fury and Wilder and all that. Maybe he's a little bit more settled in at his weight because of this time. I think you could make that argument for putting on weight for Wilder, too. You know, he's had so long to put it on rather than, hey, I'm fighting in 6 months. Let's put it on and then start camp. So there's something to be said that. He hasn't looked good, though. Johnny, really has at heavyweight. What's your thoughts going into this? Because obviously both these guys jab really well. You think jab, movement, pot shots, counters, that's basically the ingredients for Usyk. A lot of people think, oh, Usyk's got to get on the inside. And not Joshua's not a great inside fighter, so maybe that would work. But what are your thoughts going in? And then obviously your ultimate prediction for the Anthony Joshua Alexander Usyk fight this Saturday on the Zone, which, like I said, will have a packed stadium. So I'm really anticipating that.
I think I got to give my detailed breakdown on Usyk, because while I do overall think he's good and have held him in high regard, I have a lot of different takes and evaluations on him than the majority, and especially a lot of, frankly, the European fans do, which I got to, kind of break down. You know, first of all, you know, he obviously had a great amateur pedigree as he was an Olympic gold medalist. But we've had this thing, the World Series of Boxing, which they basically created where they wanted to have some of the top amateurs. And it was even an advantage even more for some of these European amateurs and Eastern European some of the Asians in the former Soviet areas. For some of these fighters to stay amateur, they benefited well. But then the World Series of Boxing, enabled them to basically have pro fights and keep their amateur status before some of the other rules had changed. So, Lomachenko fought in there, Derevyanchenko. There's been some Americans that had some fights in it as well. It wasn't as prevalent, but, Joe Joyce was fighting in there. All these guys, these Europeans that are of these advanced ages, when they talk about, this guy's only had so many pro fights. I mean, we know they had the 100 amateur fights, but they also had World Series of Boxing fights. In other words, where they were basically having pro fights that didn't end up counting on their pro record, including Usyk. Now, Usyk has beaten Joe Joyce in the World Series of Boxing, and he beat Junior Fa in the World Series of Boxing. These are two very big heavyweights. And this was before, he even was fighting in the pros as a cruiserweight. So that's my first thing. This idea, this nonsense that has been perpetrated in recent years about this adjustments to heavyweight for Usyk and all this kind of stuff is just really fictional nonsense. I mean, this guy, and he was a heavyweight in the amateurs, and then he fought heavyweight in the World Series of Boxing. The guy's 6'3" with a long reach. So it doesn't mean he's as big as Anthony Joshua. It doesn't mean he's as big as Tyson Fury. Doesn't mean he's not at a weight disadvantage and some height and reach disadvantage. But this idea that, this is not Michael Spinks, who was a middleweight in the amateurs. Now, Usyk had fought, Sean Porter in the amateurs, so he was a middleweight way back and things like that too. But I mean, Michael Spinks won his Olympic gold at middleweight. I mean, beat Larry Holmes. I mean, so for me, let's look at the cruiserweight thing. I mean, cruiserweight is a division that I hate all these alphabet created weight classes, but the heavyweights have gotten so big as the years have gone on. I'm okay with the idea that you need a cruiserweight division, with about a 200-pound weight limit at this point. I'm okay with that. But the problem for me with it has been that anybody that's really, really been a good cruiserweight, I mean, really a top cruiserweight, of course you think of Holyfield first, but, there's been some others. I mean, even frankly, even though his effort against Vladimir Klitschko was terrible, even David Haye ended up beating legitimate top 10 heavyweights. If you're that, and let's go back, you've had Michael Moorer was a light heavyweight who didn't even fight at cruiserweight, and he won the lineal heavyweight title. Michael Spinks was a light heavyweight, who was the light heavyweight champion of the world. He didn't fight at cruiserweight. He went up, he won the lineal heavyweight title. These are not that far back in boxing history, even though we are talking about some decades now. So what I'm getting to is, for me, this thing we've seen lately about, you know, comparing Usyk to Evander Holyfield, and is this guy the greatest cruiserweight of all time, and all this kind of stuff, you know, doesn't really mean a heck of a lot unless he performs well at heavyweight within a significant fight, which he hasn't yet. So, you know, Anthony Joshua is not a lineal champ. Tyson Fury is. I mean, that's not in dispute. Tyson Fury is also ranked by, you know, is also the champ of Transnational and the Ring. So, you know, I don't care about the belts. You know, Hearn likes to promo Joshua with the belts. That doesn't mean anything to me. Joshua didn't win the lineal title for anybody. He's never been lineal champ. But the reason I'm saying all that is still giving Usyk credit. He's fighting the number one heavyweight contender here, and Joshua does have the best overall resume in the heavyweight division in terms of depth right now. You know, maybe you can argue a fight here and there. You know, like Fury has a win over Klitschko. He's got a knockout win over Wilder in a draw. You know, you could say for those moments, and he's the lineal champ. But in terms of depth of resume, I agree that, you know, you got to really give that to Joshua. So what I'm saying here is, for me, for Usyk's historical legacy Saturday night, a lot of people are going to disagree. You know, that's the way things go. But, you know, if he wants to really be remembered truly among great fighters in history down the road, he needs to show me something against Joshua here. And I'll even give him a break where, you know, even if he fights extremely well and maybe falls just short, then if you want to say, okay, validates his legacy, what he did at cruiserweight, I'll accept that, and I'll say that as well. Yeah, you know, in other words, yeah, we can say that this guy was the real thing, you know, even though he did all that at cruiserweight, but, you know, he went against the number one ranked heavyweight contender, Anthony Joshua, and, you know, he fought him tight, or he almost beat him, or he hurt him and he almost beat him, or if he beats him, you know, then if he beats him, even though it's not the lineal title, still, if he beats the number one heavyweight contender, I think that validates what he's done before. But, you know, some of the cruiserweight stuff, I mean, Priebus is tough. Like you said, that was a very close fight. I didn't think the Gassiev performance was as great as everybody made it out to be. Yeah, he won the fight.
Agreed.
But Gassiev hit him with a good body shot. He was complaining to the ref. It was clearly a good body shot. At the end of one of the rounds in the first half of the fight, Gassiev hit him with another good shot, buckled him, but it was right at the bell. It was literally right at the bell. You know, Gassiev, I liked him at that point, but you got to look at it. You got to sometimes evaluate things as they age. He's done nothing since. You know, Usyk beat Glowacki. He's done nothing since. He beat Belu. Belu's retired. So, as you mentioned, you got the Briedis, which was a majority decision, and then you've got Hunter. Where, I'll give this to Usyk. Their win has aged well because Hunter's moved up to heavyweight, become a legitimate top 10 contender. And I think myself,
That kind of bodes well for him, actually.
That's
why
I'm saying that. I mean, yeah, if I'm looking at something for Usyk that's a good sign is, I thought really, even against Hunter, the ref could have stopped that fight on a few occasions. I really thought Usyk dominated that fight. He had Hunter about out. Hunter couldn't do anything. And really, a lot of even reasonable refs would have stopped that one. It was okay. It didn't get stopped, but could have been stopped on a few occasions in the last few rounds. That win has aged well, right? So, you know, if you're an Usyk fan, you're looking at that and you're saying, hey, Hunter has performed well. He's a legit top 10 heavyweight. Drew with Povetkin. That, for me, is probably the best sign for Usyk, even though Hunter's not a big heavyweight. I'm not like some other people. I actually don't discount that one because it was that cruiserweight, now Hunter's at heavyweight. I think it matters, in other words. So that, you know, aged well. I'm with you, you know, and everybody else. Did he look good against Witherspoon and Chisora? Not really. He really didn't. But, again, I think, you know, if he wants to be known as that kind of a great fighter, you know, I'm not going to buy he would have done it a few years ago or something. I think when you look at those other greats, like we've talked about, I mean, even James Toney was in there toe-to-toe with Samuel Peter. You know, James Toney was a middleweight. I mean, Roy Jones beat, you know, John Ruiz. So did Tony. I mean, you know, for goodness sake, I mean, Thomas Adamek beat Chris Arreola at heavyweight. You know, this is not got to be set up right, because this is, to me, like here's what I think we're going to, you know, I don't want to hear already. Like, if Usyk doesn't perform well Saturday night, I don't want to hear he's just not a heavyweight, because guys who are that great at cruiserweight or light heavyweight, they can, you know, they can be competitive in this type of a fight. So I feel like, you know, he needs to show that. I mean, that's for me. Now, Usyk, he's not a runner. I mean, he has really good movement. I mean, trained by Lomachenko's father, you know, in the amateurs. You do see those similarities there. You know, he's a southpaw. He uses a lot of movement, stepping around. He's got a really high work rate. Not a really great puncher, decent puncher, but certainly not a great puncher by any means. So, you know, he's got to be stepping around Joshua and have a lot of volume. I think you made a good point. People do need to look at it. You got to look at the weights of both these guys. I've just learned over time with heavyweights, every time you try to go against it, it's a mistake. I'm not going to really know 100% for my final call until we see these guys' weights. Like you said, Joshua has actually looked better when he's trimmed down some. You know, before first Ruiz fight, his weight was creeping up, and, you know, it might have been something that cost him. His stamina was much better, even though it was a dull fight. In the second Ruiz fight, he dominated. He had the weight down at a good level against Pulev. Was maybe a hair more tentative than he even needed to be in that one, but, you know, Pulev had nothing for him. I think with Usyk's quickness, he needs to keep his weight down, like you were saying. You know, he shouldn't be for this one. I don't think he should be over 240. Would be kind of a, and you know, reading real recently, there's some talk that even Usyk's got a bigger body frame than people think, but I don't know if he's just, you know, bluffing, playing possum, but there's some talk that he might come in. Like you said, he, like Wilder's been off for a while. He's been off, you know, he hasn't been as active. I mean, maybe it's true, you know, some talk that he might even come in like 230. I think that would be a mistake. So I'm going to take that in advance. That would count against him if he does that. And if Joshua comes in too high, that's going to count against him. For me, on the Joshua side of things, the main, he likes to rely on his jab, but that's not usually a good thing against a southpaw. Sometimes you can force it in, but, you know, Usyk's pretty slick, and I think that works against Joshua. You know, that's his one good punch, and his other good punch that he overly relies on, to me, leaving himself open and throws it in bad positions, is his main power punch is his right uppercut, and that's not a good fit for this fight. So the problems I see for Anthony Joshua here are, you know, Usyk's not that big of a puncher, so I don't think Joshua's got the greatest chin, but I'm not necessarily worried about it against Usyk. But I think the problems for him come in is if he can't land, and this is what I'm going to be looking for here if they're both in good condition. If Joshua can't land his two best punches, which I think is possible in this fight, the jab and the right uppercut, you know, can he adjust and put some hurt on Usyk? I think if he can, then, you know, this should be a fight he can control and do well. And I think from those few moments I saw against Gassiev, I got a feeling if Joshua – I don't think this is going to be a back and forth if Usyk starts getting hit. And not just because he's – because of those moments like we were talking about in the Gassiev fight, that I get that the feeling that if he starts taking shots from a big puncher, he's not going to want to be around long. And, you know, he may be slick enough to avoid that, especially, like I said, with the problems Joshua will have landing that jab and uppercut. What I need to see out of Joshua is he's got a really good straight right hand. He's very powerful. I mean, the power is real to me with Joshua. He's extremely powerful. And he's got pretty good hand speed too, kind of underrated. So I think if he goes with his straight right, if he can just, you know, maybe even just use the jab as a range finder, and go to that straight right for his main power punch, which for a guy his size and with his attributes, that should be the main thing. You know, like I'm talking like a Vlad Klitschko kind of thing here. You know, that was Vlad Klitschko's bread and butter. And, you know, he went on a long reign with it. I think Anthony Joshua could do that, but he just doesn't. He keeps going to that right uppercut. He keeps forcing it in. You see him doing that even when he's got guys hurt. I mean, he just always goes to the uppercut, and that's not a good punch for him here. I mean, like you said, if Usyk was inside, maybe because of the size and he needed to reach Joshua, but I'm not going to say it's impossible, but I think he needs to use that straight line. When he was finishing off pull of late, he landed a good straight right. It showed me, you know, he can do it, but he just isn't in that habit of relying on it. If he can go to a straight right hand, have his jab out there, I think he should be able to, you know, win this fight. And I mean, I'm leaning Joshua right now. I want to see the final weights for my final call. I'll put it out there on Twitter at realjohnelaw.com. I'm not going to dodge anything, but I'm a leaning Joshua right now. But I do have that concern about him being able to land his two best shots, the jab and the right uppercut.
Yeah, he does kind of have that Inspector Deck go-go gadget, right? Like, I'll throw it from way out here, like go-go gadget right uppercut. Like, it's just like, whoa, Inspector Gadget. I said not Inspector Deck. That's a rapper. But, yeah, it's that is kind of funny. You're right. It's almost like ever since he – had that highlight against Klitschko with that uppercut and how they, you know, superimposed the neck to make it look like he stretched out his neck. And, you know, I think he just fell in love with it. That's a good call. He really throws it from super far away. And, you know, if he ever did that with Wilder too much, that's where it could really hurt him. I don't know. You know, scoring points is one thing. I think Usyk will be able to land flush and all that. But, yeah, it's an interesting fight, and I don't know. I just, especially in that Chisora fight, I just saw, it seemed like when he got hit by Chisora, it was like it kind of took something out of him more, which makes sense. You're fighting at a heavier weight class, but I just, you're right though. Like volume wise, he's not a guy that just wears you down per se. I don't know. And when you move on Joshua, even Parker, who was not a great mover leading up to that, in fact, he got into a lot of brawls a lot of times. He would look good and then brawl and then get tired and then kind of go back to boxing. You know, as a young champ or even a young prospect, he did that a fair amount. But when he moved with Joshua, I'm not saying he won the fight or, you know, it was 6-6 like some people just don't like Joshua. But it was competitive. And he wasn't able to set up shop, you know, right in front of me. Like, all right, you're right there? Cool, here's my offensive display. You know, for a heavyweight in modern times, the last, whatever, 10 years, he's very fluid when he throws, but it's almost like you got to be standing right in front of him. Otherwise, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I do like the stylistic matchup. And both these guys, the rate of jab is really ridiculous. Like, especially for heavyweight.
Right.
So we are going to be seeing a bit of a chess match in general until the big, you know, blows come out or whatever. Actually, the copy box on that, 57% of Joshua's punches thrown are jabs and 61% for Usyk. So, yeah, that kind of stands out. Any other items that you'd like to discuss here with your segment, John?
I want to say I like this fight. Leading into, I think, the whole heavyweight division. Arguably, you know, if Fury and Wilder, you know, were going to fight, which they are, you know, we hope, and it's still on. I mean, there wouldn't be a better other fight that you could make that would be more intriguing than Joshua and Usyk, and that's made. Now, this is a bad undercard. Okoli's on there. And, you know, he's fighting an opponent who's undefeated but shouldn't be in there with him. And Okoli's fights are usually pretty boring until he unleashes with the power. But his power is real. So I'm going to just kind of – they always say it's premature, but it's where the money is. And it's usually – like I said, it's usually where it ends up if any cruiserweight really has the true talent. You know, I think this – some people have kind of compared Okoli as – to kind of like being a poor man's Deontay Wilder, and he's going to end up moving up to heavyweight. I actually think that is going to happen. So I don't like this undercard at all, but since we're starting this weekend through the end of October, at least with White and Valine, an excellent fight as well, hopefully the theme's going to be heavyweights, because the Wilder Fury 3 card is legitimately stacked. I mean, I never say it, but this is an old school card, the Wilder Fury 3. I mean, that is reminiscent of a card you would see 35 years ago. I mean, not quite, but it's close. With the intriguing heavyweight action on the undercard, all heavyweights. So let's say you've got a really good, so you've got an excellent, legit top 10 heavyweight matchup with the number one contender, Anthony Joshua, this weekend. That's very intriguing. Should have a good crowd, like you said, in the UK there. Then just in a couple of weeks, we go to Fury Wilder 3 with, you know, that's very intriguing. And then you've got, let's face it, if Deontay Wilder can't pull that off, I mean, that's getting close to last hurrah. I mean, he may still have some good wins here and there, but it'll be a downslide. So, you know, it's intriguing for that. It's the lineal championship. And then you've got Ajagba and Sanchez, undefeated heavies, who really at this point are on the verge of the top 10. And then you've got Konatsky and Hellenius, guys that have both been in just on the edge of the top 10. Hellenius even a little higher than that earlier in his career, but even Konatsky had just gotten in there at 10 before getting upset by Hellenius. So that's a fight, you know, on that level. And you got Jared Anderson, the best American heavyweight prospect, fighting a guy we don't know much about, but who has a good record. I mean, that's a hell of a card for boxing in 2021. And then we go to Volin and White, you know, on the 30th. That's an excellent fight. Again, both legit top 10 guys. Dillian White's almost always in a good fight, and Volin is an intriguing guy who really proved his mettle against Fury. So I'm hoping that – and there's even a rumor. People are joking about it that they need to fight because they're the only ones not fighting. But there's actually now legitimate rumors that then maybe Ortiz and Ruiz are going to fight before the end of the year. So – if this all comes off, which at least there's a chance, when we get started Saturday, heavyweight division drives boxing. I don't care what anybody says. You can go hipster with the little guys as much as you want, and I'm not saying they're not good fights, but it's still what drives things. It's what gets people interested. If this all comes off, I mean, there's really a chance to salvage this year and go into 2022 with a lot of intriguing storyline, starting with the heavyweights. And one thing I do want to throw in too, because a lot of people don't know it or they don't want to know it, and Wilder took a lot of heat for it, but hey, it's contractual, so they're not mentioning it now. I mean, it's just a fact that if Joshua loses, there's a rematch clause Hearn has with Usyk. And, you know, Joshua did just allow that too. Joshua is going to stay with Hearn for the rest of his career, so – you know, you got to remember that in your boxing analysis here with this heavyweight excitement coming up. If Usyk pulls the upset, which, you know, he's not that big of an underdog, it's Usyk Joshua too, whether we like it or not. I mean, that's what you're getting there with Anthony Joshua. So, which will make it interesting, you know, with whoever wins out of Fury and Wilder, you know, where do they go next with the lineal title? That's going to be interesting, but you do have to remember this Saturday, like it or not. If Usyk pulls the upset, you're getting Usyk Joshua too. So you got to be braced for that.
And you know, if it happened, I would like it because I like a variety of different things, right? And if that happened, it's an upset. It's interesting. It adds to it. I know, like you said, I know a lot of people won't necessarily be down for that. They want to see this, they want to see that, but sometimes it's just, not that it's not meant to be, but maybe it's not as big as a fight as in people's heads. It's like it is a big fight. We know there's a lot of money, but if they can all lose, so besides Fury, it feels like, and you know, obviously he can lose, but he's got the best chance not to. A lot of these things happen. And so what? You're not going to now watch this fight a year from now? Wonder if he wins the rematch and yada, yada, yada. I mean, he lose to Ruiz and then, you know, outbox him in the rematch of, of not in shape, whatever, his fault, Andy Ruiz, and then everybody was so pumped to watch the Fury Joshua. So it is kind of funny, and thank goodness the Four Kings didn't have boxing Twitter, because it had been like, I don't want to see any of these fights. If I don't see Hagler and Leonard, I don't want to see any of these other fights, you know. It's just kind of funny how that doesn't It's just weird how nowadays how some people think. But yeah, you're right. And then, you know, the Odo Wallen, like you said, Dillian White, whoever wins that fight is going to be in good shape if that scenario goes down, like you said, where Usyk would win. Well, who else are you going to fight at that point? Who's been knocking at the door for so long? Well, Dillian White. You know, I don't want to, you know, not count out Otto. I love that fight a lot.
Yeah, you're right, though. I think that's the way it's going to work because you look at it this way. I mean, even though, you know, Wallen is Swedish, but he lives in New York now, I have a feeling that's what's coming, too. I mean, let's say Wilder pulls the upset and Usyk pulls the upset. Let's say there's two upsets, but they're both not that big of underdogs. I mean, then, you know, the way the U.S. drives boxing money, it just does. It still drives it worldwide, you know, as opposed to anywhere else. I mean, from a business perspective, not even one guy being afraid of the other or anything like that. If Usyk also beats Joshua, I mean, they're both, you know, UK, European-based. Like you said, you know, it's not necessarily that big of a fight in the U.S. I mean, Joshua's only fought in the U.S. once. You know, Usyk, they tried him over here. He didn't, let's face it, he didn't catch on. I mean, Frank dropped him and Hearn dropped him. I mean, you can talk about his skills, but in terms of his marketability in the U.S., you know, he basically was kind of abandoned by two promoters. So, you know, what I'm saying is, I mean, maybe like if Wallen then would beat White, I mean, you know, Wallen has had PBC fights. He's fought on Showtime, even though the White's fight's going to be on the zone. He gave Fury a tough fight. I mean, that might be a U.S. fight in Vegas that with Wilder, you know, could be sold. So you'd have that. Or maybe if Ruiz and Ortiz do fight and Ruiz wins, you know, you've got Ruiz there. That would be a big U.S. And these would be fights for the lineal title at that point. I mean, they can talk about the Joshua Usyk belts, but the lineal belt's still with Fury right now. Now, if Fury wins, I think, you know, Eddie Hearn, he always looks ahead and he's not crazy about his own guys fighting each other. I think you're right. That's what he's got in mind. He figures from his perspective, he's got White is in arbitration against the WBC in Switzerland, literally. So you know, he's looking at it like, you know what Eddie Hearn's thinking is. I mean, if Usyk beats Joshua, he wants to send Dillian White out after Fury, or maybe even if Joshua wins, then say, oh, White's got to get the Fury fight first. You know, that's been arbitrated or something like that. Or, you know, Joshua's taking this other fight in the meantime, or, you know how all of a sudden an IBF mandatory will pop up for somebody we didn't want to see or something like that. So I think I'm just getting around to what you said. I got a feeling it's that White Wallen winner is going to be positioned for some, is going to be in good position for something big next year. So I'm excited that if everything comes off again in the next 35 days, it's going to make for a really interesting 2022 in the heavyweight division, no matter what happens. And that's always good for the sport.
Yeah. I mean, that you can't really go wrong. No matter the outcomes, it's setting up shit for 2022. So yeah, that's a good call. Either way, everybody's fighting in a short, or not everybody, but a lot of people fighting in a short amount of time. I appreciate you taking time out of your day, and we'll talk to you next week. Enjoy the fights, John.
All right, looking forward to it, Chris, and I'll tweet a final prediction out there before the fight, but looking forward to it, and thanks for having me as always.
Yep, take it easy. Have a good night.
Okay, take care, Chris.
And I can vouch for it. He will. He always puts his predictions on Twitter. He's not ducking anything. I mean, he'll tell you exactly what he's betting or this or that or picking and all that. So, you know, everybody calm down a little bit. And I'm already getting some messages. I got one message about from a UK fanboy, it seems, Hearn fanboy. It just doesn't even, you're so jealous of Eddie Hearn. How am I jealous of, I mean, I guess you could say a lot of people would be jealous of Eddie Hearn as far as money and all that. Sure, I guess, but like you could be too, you know, and I would say the name, but there's no really name It's just some Twitter nonsense name handle. So, I mean, he's the one who popped off at the mouth. Okay, it's just like when a fighter says, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, except at least they're fighting. and I get it. It's a promoter. They're there to talk shit. But the media job is not just to print the quote and side with people. It's about balancing it and whatnot. By the way, and 503 Portland, let me know. I just text you. Let me know if you want to jump in here. By the way, real quick, kind of going through those back-to-back Saturday and Sunday FS1 cards really quick. Malik Montgomery and Aleem Jumanoff, I think that's what it was. That was a good fight. It was competitive. It was fun to watch. Now, the score totals, you know, I had it like 8-2, and I think it was 100-90 and 99-91 and 98-92. And don't get me wrong, Montgomery, I mean, the punch stat, 1,800, almost 1,900, almost 1,900, almost eight, over 1,800, 1,837 total punches thrown, 339 to 185, 35% for Montgomery. Didn't look like a world beater, but at 10-0 or 11-0 now, 10 KOs, this was a good fight for him. I thought it was a very good fight. You know, the fight overall had an aggressive start, but Montgomery came out there throwing hooks and uppercuts. It seemed like he was throwing in a little movement in the second round. You saw Jumanoff land some really good hooks on the inside during exchanges. That was a big thing for him. But the jab and pivot, he'd throw in some Montgomery, throwing a couple of combinations. He was just overall busier. The third round was pretty competitive, as was the ninth. I definitely gave a huge shot early, especially from Jumanoff, something like that. Although, even in that ninth round, you saw Montgomery, you know, fire back with a nice right and left hook, if I remember. Kind of a right roundhouse and a left hook that kind of stood him up a little bit. But I gave him that round. You know, plenty of two-way action, though. It was fun to watch. I think that was, good test for Malik, too. So he moves on fairly handedly. Barrentes? He fought Torres, that prospect. He looked pretty comfortable. Looked pretty disciplined in there. You know, he had his jab going, lead rights, hooks, and combination. He looked pretty good as a prospect. He won fairly easily. Omar Juarez and Lopez. Was it Wario Lopez? I gave Lopez the first two rounds. Oh, wait. No, I didn't. What am I saying? I was looking at the wrong scorecard. Juarez actually didn't lose many rounds at all. There was, in the fifth round, there was a knockdown. I think it was a jab, hard right hand with 50 seconds left. And it's kind of what you kind of see out of Omar, where he'll land hard punches with the right hand mostly. You saw, I think in the third round, that's the one where I was looking at. I gave Lopez that round because he picked up the pace. He was more aggressive. But there's moments where Omar Juarez will fight really smart and look crisp and all that. And then other times where, I don't know, you know what I mean? It's just kind of like, maybe you're fighting too smart, or the opposite, where he just leaves himself open and gets hit with big shots. So still got to go back to the drawing board for Omar Juarez. But, you know, a good enough win, right? It's not something that we're going to write home about, but, pretty good. The Jesus and Chance, the Jesus and Chance, that was like, what was that, a six-rounder or something like that? Fifth round, there was a roundhouse, or wait, no, there was a, yeah, it was a fifth-round uppercut. That's what it was that knocked him down. There was a late penalty, for hitting. It was really weird. It was a draw, but it was a really fun fight. I think one had Chance 57-55, and the other had it two draws, 56-56. But I had De Jesus winning that, but it was a good prospect fight. Chance seemed to do well, early on, and then he kept looking at the clock. You could kind of see he's still pretty raw and not that experienced, because there was a couple of things that he was doing, not just looking at the clock, but a couple of things that he was doing that just didn't really add up to winning. I thought he lost the fight, but he did get a draw. But it was a good fight, though. It was a good prospect-level fight. And then Valenzuela and was it Barrio? That was a good fight. I thought that was a fun fight to watch. Valenzuela was super busy right away, pretty dominant in the early parts of that fight. There was a moment there where he hit Barrio behind the head. He kind of got mad at that, obviously, and got up and fired some shots late in that round that were really good. The fourth round I gave to Barrios. I thought that was, that's where it started heating up, the fourth and fifth. Then Valenzuela kind of took over control. Even in that fifth round, it was close. I thought maybe the last part he took enough control to win it. But it was competitive. It was back and forth. Basically, since the fourth round, it was competitive, there was was it the eighth round? I think it was the last round. Maybe it was the seventh. I think of the eighth, though. Barrio landed a left hand, super flush. And actually, it was a big right hand, then a left hand. That's what it was. And it stumbled. It stumbled down Zuela a little bit, kind of one of those neck snaps. It was kind of like, whoa, I got hit, and then the left hand followed. And so, once again, a good prospect test. And that's what we like out of these prospect, either it's prospect versus prospect, prospect versus vet, in more of a step-up fight. It was good. It was very good. It was fun. All right. So I'm going to go ahead and go out to 503 Portland. I will give my prediction after we talk to him about the Anthony Joshua Oleksandr Usyk. I've broken it down a little bit, but I will give you a little bit more preview and predict that. Of course, we'll have some current fight news out there, variety of stuff. Some of it's really good news. Jojo Diaz and Ryan Garcia are getting further in talks. WBC called a title eliminator. So there's a variety of stuff that we'll talk about. And, of course, the boxing Twitter segment to close. Let's go out to Portland 503 and see what's going on. What up, man? How you doing, buddy?
Oh, shit. My bad. I messed it all up. What up, Chris? Hey, yo, just chilling.
That's
down
okay.
Here.
You can close on. How about you close on? All
right.
You can close with it.
All right. Thanks, brother. Yeah, and everything's good on my side, bro. We're back in back to Oregon weather, back to rain and cold or whatever, but it's all good. It's time of that year. But how's everything, Chris? How you doing, brother?
I'm doing good, man. I'm doing really good. I'm just kind of adjusting to, everything kind of back in the frame, busy and all that. So, yeah, it's been good. The weather's been good here. It's either been nice and warm or actually Thursday it was like 88 degrees out of nowhere, but there was a big storm and just probably 15 miles from here, it touched pretty heavy winds and stuff. A lot of trees went down, a lot of power outages. I think like 60,000 people lost their power for a little bit, but it's been good, man. Really good. I'm excited about this weekend and some of these fights coming up,
Yeah. Hell yeah. Definitely, man. And right before we get to present news and everything, I just wanted to mention a few weeks back, Oscar Valdez had a fight, and I know I'm kind of late on this, but man, I really, when stuff like that happens and that's on our side, like the Mexican one, I have no problem with it. But in all honesty about the fight, man, I think I forget the Brazilian's name, but I just thought he he was doing great in the first rounds, and then like he started showboating and putting his arms in the air and kind of taking some rounds off, and I think that's what really cost him the fight. But I don't know, it's just funny how a lot of people were mad about it and the decision. I don't know, it's hilarious because Oscar Valdez did show a lot of damage in that fight. If you see his face, a lot of people it just tells a different story. But I don't know, man, that dude was tough. Valdez got through that one, man. And you know what I love the most too, man, about that night, that it was, I believe it was in Arizona. So like, you know, when things like that, like, you know, you're in a different state, and especially where it's like heavily Mexican populated, like you gotta take it, you know, bring it to the champion. You gotta, you know, take it from him. You got to be like, you know, bring the fight to him, make him crumble. You know what I mean? And there was times where that Brazilian was doing really great. If you know, when he was throwing some right hands that pushed him really back. So I just wanted to mention that real fast. But Oscar Valdez, you know, moves on. And, you know, there's that, you know, obviously there's that, the shadow of what happened, right? The drug test. You know, that's, you know, he gets to move on. You know what I mean? I guess there wasn't too much that happened from what I know. But Oscar Valdez, he stays undefeated, moves on to the next guy. But man, that fight alone, man, that was pretty scary for the moment. If I could say that real fast. And but also, what else? Also, before the other Oscar De La Hoya, he pulled out of that fight with Vitor Belfort, and to me it was just, he wanted to get out. He had some video. It is what it is. He used the COVID excuse. To me, it was just he backed out. Like, he really backed out. To me, in my opinion, that's my opinion. Like, he didn't want any of that. You know what I mean? And but shout out to Holyfield. Shout out to Vitor for making their money. You know, there's nothing wrong with that. Also, shout out to Anderson Silva for another win in Boston. You know what I mean? Looks like he's going to get another big win or another big fight after this one. So, you know, stay tuned to that. But also to this, what else? This weekend, if I could just real mention it real fast, we got Joshua Usyk. You know, this one is pretty good. You know, let's this one, I believe, is in England. I got to go with Joshua for this fight just because he is the real heavyweight in, you know, coming into this fight. So he's got the better experience. And also he's going to, you know, have the UK crowd behind him. So I think that's going to play a big factor in this fight. I don't have too much to say about that, but I just feel like Joshua should win this one. I don't know if he gets the knockout. Usyk is pretty tough. I'm going to go with 12-round decision for Anthony Joshua for this one. And also just for the last topic, and I'll close it with this, man. You know, we had the Canelo Caleb Plant conference yesterday, and man, it was lit. It was you know, exciting. It was, you know, it was everything casual fans wanted, like a real, like just real emotion, real, you know, real action. And if I can mention some things about this, the press conference, man, when they were brought up to the stage, Canelo and Plant, right, there was no security. There was no, like, none of the commission guys in the, you know, on the stage or anybody really, really, like, taking action, being in front of these guys, man. Like, I can't believe, I can't believe they just let that slide, like, without, you know, because they're about to face, you know, because they faced off and, you know, shit was going to pop off because these guys have been talking some shit on, you know, on Twitter. Well, Canelo hasn't, but, you know, Plant has. I'm not too surprised of that, you know, that happening. You know, these guys are both about it. You know, both guys didn't back down. You know, you saw Canelo shove Plant first. And then if I could say something about that push, man, Canelo is a strong guy, man. You, dude, he kind of pushed him really far, man, off frame, like close to, you know, pretty far back, man. And, you know, that kind of showed me something, too, that he's probably most likely going to be the stronger fighter out of them. And then that, and then Plant right comes with that left hook or left slap or whatever. And, you know, to me, he did graze him. I'll give him that. But, you know, Canelo with that.
Have you seen the
one shot?
He didn't graze him. He landed it right on his face. You could see the still shot.
Was it
all four or five fingers?
It wasn't palm, though, man. Right? It wasn't palm, though. It was like fingers, right? It was like the finger shot, you know, more fingers, right?
No, but it wasn't a grazing shot is my point.
Okay. Well, to me, it looked like a grazing shot. It didn't really look I mean, there's like those photos and, you know, there's some of those close-ups.
It looks like he ducked it live. Looked like he ducked it live, though. It didn't look like it had contact live.
Yeah.
I had to watch the replay and the stills. see it.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely, because it was super quick because, man, all of a sudden you see Canelo, you know, jump up, you know, kind of jump back and then 1-2 him, which looked kind of more of a palming 1-2 or slapping 1-2. You know what I mean? It wasn't
right.
– they both didn't throw fists. But obviously, again, Plant got the worst of it, man, with those two cuts underneath the eye, man, underneath that right eye. And, you know, I was listening to an interview with ESPN when he mentioned that he believes it was due to the sunglasses that he was wearing. It just hit him kind of, you know, hit him that way. He says it's not that big. Hopefully they're not that big of a cut. That's not that big of, you know, a big of a problem leading into the fight because, man, anything could happen now. What's up?
It's a good spot, though. It's a good spot to get a cut rather than, you know, on your eye, actually, because then that would have been like, oh, shit, dude, you know?
Yeah, dude. Like, you imagine if it was just some sort of eye tear or some retina tear, dude, that would have been a lot worse. I'm sure there would have been some crazy legal action. You know, Canelo would really
have
to be on the defense on that one. Yeah.
Canelo even said
they
would have had to postpone it. He agreed with it after he said we would have had to wait, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, most definitely, man, because that – and I can't believe, man, that was kind of serious, man, that those two cuts. I mean, that just shows you, you know, this shit is bad blood going into this fight now. You know, Caleb Plant, you know, both guys were talking shit to each other. I believe there was a loss – there was some the language barrier there, like lost in translation, you know, kind of dissing, you know, because Canelo, you know, obviously he's a Mexican. He only, you know, his first language is Spanish. So, you know, saying the mother effer, you know what I mean? To him, you know, I'm sure, you know, he's
said
but he's
before, used that
that's
term
what I
before.
Don't really get.
He just said
yeah,
it,
that's what I'm
though.
Saying. Like,
so it's a one-sided lost in translation then because so he can tell people to go fuck his mom. You know, or that he's a motherfucker, but he can't be told that. I think that was – he was just mad. I don't really think –
yeah,
I think that was just a – I think that was just an excuse for pushing him. I don't believe he actually thought he was talking shit about his mom.
Yeah, most definitely, man, because, you know, as much as I like to back up Canelo and say everything positive about him, I do have to agree with you on that one just because, like, you know, he used that for an excuse to push him, and so there's not, like, a lot of back and forth and really give him, like, you know, because Canelo was the first to exchange, you know what I mean? He was the push set it off, you know what I mean?
Right.
So he kind of, you know what I mean? He was more red or, you know, his more boiling, you know what I mean? Like, he was more mad about the whole situation, but, you know what I mean? So it was more of an excuse, to my opinion, but because, I mean, in all honesty, and, you know, if I can mention, like, he used it against Andrade Bubu, and then he also, and he said this in Spanish, he said, chinga tu madre, to fucking, what's his name, Daniel Jacobs after the win.
Yep,
so he knows what's up, you know what I mean? This is trash talking, you know what I mean? He's there to get, rally people up and get mad, you know, sell pay-per-view, sell tickets, you know what I mean? So, you know what I mean? It's already bad blood. To me, this is already 100% bought, in my opinion. Like, I'm already buying this. Even if it's $100, I'm still buying it. You know, I hope it's a great undercard, but, you know, it's I'm still buying it. That's what I'm saying. And, but, yeah, like just them talking shit. And you know, I got to give credit where credit is due to the PBC because, man, after that altercation, I would have, you know, it would have been a good excuse for Plant to excuse himself from, you know, from there and kind of go get medical help or, you know, seek medical just to be on the safer side about that eye, you know, because, like, but he stayed there in the press conference. It went off like, you know, it was supposed to. Canelo stared off at Plant from the distance of where he was sitting at.
Yeah, that was funny.
Bro, they were just staring at each other. Man, it was lit, man. And that's the kind of situations that I love, man.
Mad.
You got to really see. You know, you got to see their body language, what their emotions are. You know what I mean? This isn't wrestling. This isn't, you know, they're faking it up. And then they're going to, you know, shake hands behind closed doors. You know what I mean? Like, this isn't – I could seriously see this as real bad blood, man. And Canelo saying this is going to be under 8 rounds. Predicting that he's easy work, you know, he's not on his level. You know, I gotta, you know, I gotta 100% agree with Canelo there. Obviously his fights have shown that Canelo is a dominant force in this division. Plant, you know, obviously he's gone through that. I believe his last fight was Truex. You know, I already said what I had to in the previous show about it. I didn't think highly of it. He did pull off a great execution in his boxing skills, but man, it's going to take a lot more than that with this Canelo. Because let's face it, you got the judges, you got the referee, you got the crowd, you got everybody against you in this one, man. You really going to have to pull something, you know what I mean, big, and you're going to have to show it. You can't just try to box 12 rounds and think you won. Like, this is, you know, it's sad to say, but man, this is what we have to go through, right? This is the A-side treatment. So you plan must be in this November 6th, he has to show up at like 110%, the best shape of his life, mentally, physically, everything there. But we're going to, you know, we have to wait and see. That's the thing. So, and I can't wait, man. This is after this press conference, you know what I mean? They don't have to do any more world tours and a Mexico tour, you know, East Coast tour, West Coast tour. That was it for me, bro. It was lit, man. All that situation, you know what I mean? And I love this whole back and forth between, you know, the fans, you know, Canelo fans, Plant fans, PBC fans, Canelo fans. Like, you know, this is sick, man. This is rally up. And you got to give it to the PBC, Showtime, and Steven Espinoza for pulling this one off and getting this one because, man, in all honesty, I wasn't 100% behind Jake Paul that pay-per-view, but I still bought it just because the entertainment-wise. But I'm glad to see that Showtime has picked up, you know, more boxing in a competitive way than freak fights or entertainment fights. You know what I mean? So I really got to give it to Showtime on this one. And but yeah, man. As far as you hear my reaction, man, I'm lit up, man. You know the Mexicanos are lit for this one, man. So but yeah, and but yeah, man. As far as that, I don't have too much to say, man. I just want to give a big shout out to you, Chris, man, holding it down. And also, yo, Chris, before I get out of here, man. You know, we got the news a while back, Sean Porter, Terrence Crawford, this being in late November. Do you see anything bad with that date, Canelo, with Canelo and Plant being right at the beginning? Do you see anything there, like a problem? Like, do you see maybe a postponement or rescheduling with that fight? Or do you see it fully 100% happening on that date?
Well, I don't think there's an issue with the date because they knew that the November 6th thing was already done before they announced. So I don't think that may have been why Fox didn't want to do it because, you know, maybe that, I don't know. But no, I don't think so. One, it is going to be ESPN only. So they have their own stratosphere with NFL and college football and then just stuff going on during the week and also playoffs for baseball and whatnot. I think they have some of that. So I think that they can advertise that fight on their own stuff. So no, I don't see that because we already knew the November 6th date. They just had their first presser, but the November 6th date was already known ahead of time. So I don't think that'll be a problem. And like I said, it's only ESPN. It has nothing to do with Showtime, nothing to do with Fox. So I mean, don't get me wrong. It could get pushed back for other stuff, but I don't think that is going to be the case.
Okay. And I'm just hoping, man, because I was seeing like two pay-per-views in 1 month. I don't know. You know what I mean? And then with December coming up, you know what I mean? The holidays, like it's a, I don't know. To me, I would have just thought better. But yeah, man. As far as that, I hope it does happen. I'm a big fan of this Crawford Porter fight. This is that one's really exciting. You know, just because it's Porter this time. So if I can mention that real fast. And but yeah, man. As far as that, I don't have too much to say. Chris, I just want to thank you, man. It's been a while since I've been on the show, man. Thank you for giving me a text and then letting me know about the show, bro. Shout out to the Ropa Dope Radio and Viva Mexico, cabrones.
Yes, sir. You gonna do the outro or what?
There we go. Al sonoro rugir del cañón y retiembla en sus centros la tierra al al sonoro rugir del cañón. Signo patria, tú tienes de oliva, de la paz del arcángel divino, que en el cielo tu eterno destino por el dedo de Dios escribió. Mas si osare un extraño enemigo profanar con sus plantas tu suelo, pienso, patria querida, que el cielo un soldado en cada hijo te dio, un soldado en cada hijo te dio. Mexicanos, el grito de guerra, el acero a prestar y el bridón, y retiembla en sus centros la tierra al sonoro rugir del cañón. Y retiembla en sus centros la tierra al sonoro rugir del cañón. ¡Viva México!
Hell yeah, man. You take it easy. Have a good one. Alrighty, man, that song gets me every time, dude. That song gets me every single solitary time. The passion, the authority, you know, the emotion, it just, man, that gets me every time. I love it. I love it. All right. Giving my last takes here, doing the preview prediction. Of course, we'll do the current fight news is out there. There's a variety of it. And then, you know, some other news as well. And then, of course, the Twitter segment. But just kind of looking at Oleksandr Usyk, I'm on BoxRec right now. And, you know, he fought in October 2019. That was his first heavyweight fight. So it was just short of a year after the Tony Bellew. And then it was another year before he fought Derek Chisora, and that was already that was Halloween last year. So from 2019, flash forward 2 years, you know, that's pretty crazy, you know. And if you back it up to the fall, the November 2018, he's only had two fights. Chaz Witherspoon, where he didn't look good at all, and Derek Chisora, where, you know, he won it, but I don't know. There's something about the way he was taking those shots, and I'm not saying, oh, my God, he was out on his feet the whole time, and he was lucky to survive. Nothing like that. Nothing like that. He won that fight. But he didn't look that great doing it. And maybe this last, well, under a year, has helped him, like I said, build that body and maintain it. Maybe this time frame really helps you settle into that weight. And maybe John, what he was saying earlier, you know, about fighting at heavyweight before and fighting a Joe Joyce and Junior Fa and all the things he said, you know, he makes a lot of good points, you know. And I am interested to see what Joshua looks like body-wise, because, like I said, the footage and the video can be misleading, but he does look a little leaned down more. He really does. The key thing, though, will be the consistent movement. You know, that jab, both of them love to jab. The jab, obviously, for Usyk, I'm speaking of, like I said, the consistent movement. You know, AJ doesn't come wild at you and come forward and all that. He likes to fight at range. He actually doesn't cut the ring off all that well. And that's why I mentioned the Parker fight. There was times where Parker was on the outside, and it's like he couldn't set up shop to land his big shots. He would land maybe one at a time, but he really likes you right in front of you. Then he can look very, very good, very sharp, very accurate and all that with his offensive display, speaking of AJ. But that jab, the movement, obviously the defense, and you're going to have to pot shot. You know, you're going to have to do some pot shotting. And literally, the reach is not that crazy. Sure, 6'6 and all that for Anthony Joshua compared to, I think, 6'3, but 82 to 78 is not crazy, you know, especially when I doubt that Joshua is going to be the one sitting on the outside using that reach, you know. Getting on the inside and getting all the way in and doing some of the stuff maybe he did with Hunter, I think you could mix some of that in, but he took a lot of shots in that Hunter shot or in that Hunter fight, and I don't think you want to take those type of shots with AJ because he is a power puncher, even like John said. But yeah, the pot shots, he's going to have to make him, you know, pay for the mistakes Usyk is. And how many times have we seen him move the whole fight? You know, there's times we're at range and maybe a little movement. He's looked phenomenal. I mean, Bellew had a little success coming forward against him, whatever. But I don't know. I really think it'll be more of a chess match, you know. Like I was saying earlier about the jabs, the CompuBox jabs, and the percentage. If they're going to try to jab each other's head off, right? And, you know, speaking of counters, when he does do that at range, AJ, when he does that at range go-go gadget from a distance right uppercut that John spoke of too, he's going to have to make him pay for that. You know, he's definitely going to. Now, it doesn't mean you got to linger and brawl with him. Now, if you got him hurt, try to get close to him. Get on the inside. But do you really want to be leaning on Anthony Joshua and being that close to him? I mean, how much more weight are you going to have, overall power, size, whatever? He's got to move pretty much a lot of the fight, or at least be at a range where, you know, he can't take a lot of damage, but you can't be too far away. Like I said, both of them like to fight at range, and maybe to go along with that chess, that it will be at range, both of them. But that's where that reach and the style, I'm not sure if he's going to be able to get in there and time him well enough without some movement to get, you know, AJ off balance a little bit and pivot. And sure, you tie up at times. I think you should tie up at times for sure. But you don't want to do that too much because you'll probably end up wearing out yourself, to be honest with you. If you're constantly clinching or something like that, you know, and then if you sit at range the whole time, then you're at the end of Joshua's punch. Is that great? You know, I don't think so. So I think he'll move a lot. I'm not saying the first three rounds he's going to be circling him on his bike, on his 10-speed and all that. I'm not necessarily saying that because I could see Joshua being very patient to start this out. I think it'll be kind of a, you know, what people will be saying as a boring fight in the first couple minutes, first couple rounds. I don't know, but I just think that it'll be kind of chopping down a tree slowly but surely, and Joshua will wear him down enough to see the difference. If Chisora, and I mean by the landing power and what it does to the body and slowing you down, and obviously, you know, Joshua doesn't want to make a living at going to the body, but obviously, you know, maybe during the tie-up, punch him on the hip, you know, that type of thing. Slow him down, wear him down. I just think what I've seen out of him, like that Chisora fight especially, he just didn't look that great at the weight. And it seemed like there's just times where it's, I don't know, you know, I just, and then if he's got to move the whole time with this new weight, that just kind of seems like he's going to gas a little bit. I'm not saying that Usyk has this long history of gassing, but I'm going to go a decision. If there's a stoppage, I think it'll be TKO. But I think the tools and the tool belt, the movement, just being able to defend yourself, you know, grasping on when you need to, clinching, you know, pivoting. I think that's if you're ever in the corner and all that, he's got to be able to clinch and move. Not a full on bear hug per se, unless you're hurt. But in a sense, and this is kind of a weird thing because Joshua and Margarito don't line up as far as the offensive fighters and their style. But you know how Mosley, like, landed something big and then tied him up and turned him and then let him go? That's what I see, you know, in a sense anyway, Usyk's going to have to do. And he's not going to have to do it nearly as many times because the aggressiveness is nowhere near, you know, from AJ compared to Margarito. Anyway, I am going to go Anthony Joshua by decision. Something like, let's say, 8-4. Could it be 7-5? Sure. I mean, if his pot shot game and his counter game, his timing, the jab, the movement, not letting him, like I mentioned, set up shop, Usyk could, you know, maybe he could. I mean, he's going to at least have to win 7 rounds to get the decision. Probably clean rounds, you know. So I'm going to go decision. Possible majority decision. Once in a while, we have a style clash, if in fact that's what it turns out to be. The guy coming, you know, inching forward, quote-unquote, making the fight, and the guy on the move. You know, maybe you will get that random scorecard and it makes it a majority decision or maybe a split decision. But, yeah, I see the cards. Probably unanimous. Maybe not, though. But, yeah, for Anthony Joshua. Late TKO, sure. It could happen. I think it would just be wearing down, taking a lot of shots. But I do think Usyk has enough, like I mentioned, in the tool belt to stay alive. You know, well, let's hope he stays alive. But you know what I mean. You know what I mean. I'm not trying to have anybody, you know, pass. I'm just saying. Anyway, so that's my prediction for that fight. I think it'll be a good fight, no doubt about it. So, you know, the WBA is making a lot of noise for cleaning up the mess that they started several years ago with all these interim belts and super regular kind of champ and, you know, whatever. And then they've been calling a lot of fights. Some of them are pretty good, and some of them will lead to a potentially good fight and whatnot. The WBC just mandated some fights, whether it's, like I said, championship fights, like a mandatory or, you know, an eliminator. One of them is Gary Russell Jr. against Mark Magsayo, which could be an interesting fight to an extent. He's a mandatory now for that 126 belt. Eduardo Ramirez, and I like this fight a lot. What is it, the Lamanita? Lararto? That could be interesting for a final elimination there. Donaire against Gabayo. Raymar Gabayo, I think it is, for a mandatory for his belt. So it's, you know, it's weird because Casamayor, the WBO, just ordered Paul Butler for Casamayor. And then, you know, now Donaire has a Mando as well. So doesn't look like they're going to fight. But who knows? Maybe there could be a deal that is reached. Just to kind of follow up on that, because Donaire kind of came out and, you know, made it known that he's ducking. That's what he said. Just got a call from Richard Schaefer, and he said Casamayor is running away now after all that was said August 14th. I'm scared to sign the contract against me. That's what happens when somebody talks a good game, but when there's a knock on the door, they go hiding. Here's the thing, Donaire. To say that he's afraid of you when he was signed to fight you, you know? And as it turned out, he did get his paperwork in on time. And remember, Donaire, I love Donaire in a lot of ways. We had him on the show years ago when it was that interview format. And the only thing I had to say about that, you know, some of the stuff that their side, Casamayor and his team, were saying were disrespectful or a variety of things. I get that. And he tried to talk like he was going to, you know, his respect and zero tolerance. And, you know, you gotta be more respectful. I'm going to take the high road. But then he turned around and didn't take the high road a couple different times. So that kind of made me scratch my head a little bit. Like, well, dude, if you're saying we should be more respectful in boxing, which, you know, this is boxing, by the way. But then he turns around and calls him, you know, oh, he's a coward now. He's scared to fight, sign the fight. Well, he was ready to fight you, dude. So it just, I don't know. Like I said, I love Donaire to death as a fighter. But to me, it's kind of in between. It's like, take the high road or don't, dude. But don't tell everybody to take the high road, and then don't take it yourself. Like, it's a little funky to me, to be honest with you. Now, you know, Gibbons did come back and say, no, that's not true. There's still talks, yada, yada, yada. You know what I mean? So, but, you know, I don't know what the talks would lead to now because you know, we do have a scenario where they just both now have fights. So I'm not really sure exactly, you know, how that's going to go. But it is what it is. Actually, someone sent me that. Oh, here we go. Richard Schaefer tells ESPN he was informed by Al Heyman that he's rejected it, that Casamore's rejected the title for unification. Sean Gibbons tells ESPN nothing's been rejected. We're still working through some things. That was 2 days ago. So maybe they're working through some things. Is that, I don't know. Speaking of Richard Schaefer, it sounds like he's going to go, he's getting back into promoting, but it's going to be more around the world promoting. That's what he said. 80 to 90% of his cards are going to be outside the U.S. He wants to promote, co-promote, or sponsor 100 events. He just started a new company. Harrison Whitman, a key deal maker, this is Coppinger, at Top Rank for 5-plus years, who left the company last year, will serve as chief strategy and legal officer. ProBellium, is that what it is? Eric Winter, former media executive at Yahoo Sports and UFC, is COO. There will be also a digital platform, so we'll see, you know, what he does with that. Not really sure exactly what to think about that. But here is another one. This would be a WBC interim, but a final elimination for Devin Haney's belt. You know, we talk about the WBO and shit on for great reason, but the WBC at lightweight is just a mess. They got a franchise belt, they got an email belt, and then they got a, you know, an interim belt. So, like I said, attack the WBL we want, but let's be honest here. But Joseph Diaz Jr. and Ryan Garcia are in talks, which would be a damn good fight. And it sounds like they want to close the year with it, I believe in October or December. Sign me up for that one. You know, I like that a whole lot. I think that's great. I think, you know, like I said, I'm down for that fight. I think it's a really, really good fight. And, you know, I'll love it. But Eddie Hearn said some pretty funny stuff about the fight being ordered. Have you ever known anything more farcical? I have. It's just ridiculous. What's the point of having a final eliminator? And he is making a point because some final eliminators will be for another final eliminator. And then a final, you know, it is kind of messed up. But two guys duck Devin Haney and you make them fight each other. It's a duck-off. That's what he said, pro fans. But, you know, if they're going to fight each other, we can say duck all we want. That's fine. I get it. But I do want to remember that that's still a good fight. Let's not get too out of hand here. Here's another one for Coppinger. Golovkin and Murata have agreed to a middleweight title unification bout December 28th in Japan. We've heard about this for quite some time. This is the strange part. Sides are waiting for DAZN sign-off to push forward. It's like, how long have we heard about this damn fight? Why would they need DAZN? And this is sources, so this doesn't mean it's factual, you know? But to me, it's like, well, if they got to wait to see if DAZN's going to put up the money for this, what the hell have we been waiting all this time, you know, for Golovkin to fight then? It's really weird. By the way, we mentioned this earlier, John did, Anthony Joshua inks a career-long promotional pack with Eddie Hearn, Matchroom Sports, so kudos to him. I'm assuming he'll go to DAZN in the UK after, but who knows? You never know. You never know. Also from Cop, Eddie Hearn tells ESPN he plans to stage Michael Soro against Israel Madrimov in November in the U.S., France, or Uzbekistan on DAZN. Matchroom won the rights to the WBA 154-pound title eliminator today with a bid of $245,000. That's a good fight. That is a good fight. I really like that fight. Speaking of some U.S. fights here, Jamal James and Butsiev. What is it? Razab? Butsiev are going to fight October 30th because the WBA made basically a four-man tournament, and they put some deadlines on it. And J- Jake and I actually talked last week about Jamal James fighting in December, possibly. Now I assume David Morrell Jr. will be that main event because there is one more card at the Armory. I believe it's on Fox. But there's one more card in December. I've been notified. So they couldn't do it. They couldn't do it in December. It had to be done by a certain date, both the fights have. But Budiev and Jamal James in Las Vegas at the Virgin Hotels October 30th. This will be Showtime. And the co-feature is Jerron Boots Ennis and Thomas Delorme. So those are some interesting fights. I like that. I like that's a good card. That's pretty dope. That's good. That's another thing that, you know, the WBA here can do right and make some good fights. You know, if you're going to restructure and all that, this is what you got to do. And here's a perfect example, just to kind of read some of that, the four-man box-off at the welterweight division to create a real, quote-unquote, belt at the WBO. Ugas has 119 days to schedule a fight with Staniotis. So Ugas and Staniotis, I believe, will happen in November, if I remember correctly. He's got to fight him by November. And the winners must meet in March, by March 2022. So that's – sign me up for Staniotis and Ugas. They've been moving him nicely. And so I'm excited about that. Parker and Chisora 2, December 18th at the Manchester Arena. It is what it is. I'm not going to diss the fight. It just wasn't that exciting, but it was competitive. So you can make an argument for both guys, so that's why you're not going to see me push back heavy on it. I'm not overly excited about the fight. I'm not going to lie to you. But it was competitive enough. I'm not going to sit here and complain about wanting competitive fights, and then when they deliver one, then I'm going to shit on the rematch. I'm just not going to do that. We heard about, you know, Mikey Garcia's return October 16th. Jesse Rodriguez and Esteban Bermudez is the opener on that. And Elwin Soto and Jonathan Gonzalez, which I think is a good fight. That's going to be interesting. Talking to Boxing Social, Savannah Marshall says, a fight with Clarissa Shields is 99% made to take place in the UK. Kind of interesting there. There was talks on Boxing Scene and ESPN about Munguia and Derevchenko as a title eliminator, which I would be all for. But There was reports that he withdrew, Munguia withdrew, because he's due to face Gabriel Rosado October 23rd or around there on DAZN. But Jake, this was a handful of days ago. Jake did come out and say he hasn't withdrawn. He's just going to revisit him. I don't know. But Munguia and Derevchenko, I like that fight. Now, Gabe's having like a little second part to his career. Maybe it's a third or fourth. But that's not a bad fight for him either. You know what I mean? I don't think that's a bad fight for him whatsoever, actually. So, yeah, we'll see where that goes. You know what I mean? I'm not totally sure on that one. By the way, this would be pretty big news. This is from Time Sports. DAZN has reportedly set their sights on buying BT Sport and taking over the Premier League rights. That would be huge for DAZN in the UK, obviously. Brandon, here's some really good news. I'm almost thinking about going to this fight. I haven't been to a Vegas fight in a while, and I'm starting to think I might go to this one. It's over Thanksgiving weekend, November 27th. The rescheduling, because Brandon Figueroa did get COVID. Brandon Figueroa, Stephen Fulton, the rescheduled November 27th on Showtime from Vegas. Good old Vegas. That's a good fight. And the tickets are already on sale. It's just a good, affordable fight to go to. That's basically what I was thinking there. So, I like that. I like that. This was a while ago, but that purse bid for Mingy. So they won't, it sound like they didn't, yeah, they are going to go for that game fight. Someone actually just sent me a text on that. Let's see here. That might be it for fight. So there was an announcement, and the fact that the fight got announced and then it got changed because of backlash is just ridiculous. Because it's like, well, what the hell were you thinking anyway? You know what I mean? But Lamar Odom, which look at his track record history of health in the last, 10 years, probably less actually, due to that heart attack, strokes. I mean, this guy's been in bad shape against Riddick Bowe. And, you know, we thought that Evander looked bad warming up on the mitts or whatever he was doing, warming up, doing mitts. I don't know. We saw what he looked like in the ring, a grazing shot had him stumbling. Riddick Bowe's way out of shape, guys, as we know. You know, that's been something that has been in his, even when he was in his prime. But Riddick Bowe, and I get it, Lamar Odom doesn't know how to fight, I don't know. But when you see the video of Riddick Bowe, and by the way, Malignaggi and Corey B were the co-feature. This was official celebrity boxing. Well, they from the backlash, because the video that they showed was really bad of Riddick Bowe. It looked like, what are you doing here, dude? When this is, we don't need this, dude. We don't need this at all. From the backlash, they decided, which doesn't really, I'm not going to give them any credit for stopping this fight, because you announced it, and then all of a sudden now, oh, yeah, well, we're not going to do it now. It's just weak. It's weak. But that fight is just ridiculous. Like I said, go look at the video of Riddick Bowe and tell me you even want to watch him fight, even with headgear and big gloves. No, thank you. Just adding to this, this Kavanaugh dude, I've mentioned him multiple times. We talked about him last week from Triller with Jake. So Holyfield looked like shit, dude. He got grazed with the shot. He was wobbling, weebling. He says, Triller's Kavanaugh, this is MMA fighting from them. He thinks that, despite what him looking like shit against Belfort, he said, hopefully, I think Holyfield will end up fighting someone again. Hopefully people see as a better suited, whether it's Tyson or something like that. So Belfort was like a good enough boxer. How much lower are you going to go than Belfort if we're still staying in the MMA/boxing world? So you're going to fight him again, probably because you owe him more money, and we're gonna just match him better. The guy had a grazing shot and was stumbling, dude. Speaking of Kavanaugh, he said, we're actually going to move this Teofimo Lopez for how many times now in Kambosos' fight to October 16th. Nothing's finalized, but he said, Oakland plays Monday Night Football. We don't want to go head to head with that. It's like, dude, everybody knew when he announced it for a Monday, the week of Fury and Wilder, that you were going head-to-head with Monday Night Football. Once the NFL starts, I got news for you. They got a Monday Night Football game every single night of the week, or every single week, one after another, and it draws ratings. So it's just like, so they want to do a versus at the Barclays, the artist to yet to be determined, right? So they're moving this. They want to move the fight again, but, both teams don't want to move it. And now, according to Jake Donovan here, posted a couple hours ago on BoxingScene.com, IBS stand firm on October 4th date. So we expect no additional postponements in the fight to take place October 4th, 2021. That's what Linda Torres, lead counsel for the IBF, informed attorneys for Lopez and Kambosos and Triller, being official, letter, the copy, from Boxing Scene. And Kambosos clearly expressed that he is unwilling to fly around the world until he has complied with the obligation to provide a plan to get him home in a reasonable time and manner. I mean, could you imagine trying to get ready for this fight? I mean, you can not like the fight. I don't. Whatever it is. Hopefully it's a competitive fight, you know. But the runaround that has taken place here, dude, like what? Like how many times are you going to say this and that? And, well, you know what? We just realized, and that's where it goes back to the media pressing these. It doesn't mean you got to be a dick or nothing, but you press them and go, well, didn't you know that Monday Night Football is every Monday in the NFL? What, the last week, is that week 18 now because there's 17 games? They don't have a Monday Night Football that last week, right, because that would give somebody an unfair advantage. I believe they don't do that because they do them on Saturdays by that time. So to sit there and be like, oh, you know what it was is there was Monday Night Football, so we don't want to go ahead. Dude, what are you talking about? We know Monday Night Football was on. Monday Night Football is going to be on. It says it right there in the title. So from September, mid-September to January, guess what? Monday Night Football is on. It's just ridiculous, dude. Oh, Manny Pacquiao, here's what he said. I boldly accept the challenge of running as president of the Philippines. We need progress. We need to win against poverty. We need a government to serve our people with integrity, compassion, and transparency. The time is now. I'm ready to rise to the challenge of leadership. So good for Manny Pacquiao. You know, I'm not sure he's going to win, but hey, good for him, man. That's dope. This actually comes from Lance Pugmire speaking to the boxing commissions, the Association of Boxing Commissions or whatever, head Mike Muzila. That he's forming a committee through medical experts to establish criteria that would review, approve, stop legends, fights, exhibitions or not, with a keen eye on the plan Riddick Bowe next month. Whether that actually plays into it or not, you know. My thing is, like I said last week, call it what it is. Don't act like, don't sit there and say it's a real fight only to say it was an exhibition after, because now you're misleading the public. You're charging pay-per-view. You have to at least let the people know if it's an exhibition or not. I went on a long rant with this before with the Tyson Jones. It wasn't my cup of tea. I've seen both their primes, their careers. I've seen their past their primes. Cool. If you loved it, more power to you. They didn't make a fool of themselves that night. I'd never say that. And Tyson looked like he had a good left hook to the body still. But they weren't calling it what it was, and so many people complained after that, and rightfully so. Sure, you have a responsibility to find out what it is or try to find out what it is, I guess, but when they mislead you, especially if it's on pay-per-view, dude, do not, you know, call it an exhibition, because this Holyfield thing, all of a sudden they were saying, no, it was actually an exhibition because it's not going on their box rack. Well, you didn't say that. You said it was a real fight. So at least be straight up with the people about this. This shit's getting wild now. It's like, dude, just say it, man. Just say it. Just say the truth about it. Don't give us this bullshit. I get you want to sell pay-per-views. But if it's an exhibition, let people fucking know, dude. Stop lying. All right, so I think that we are in boxing Twitter mode. 6 months ago, some folks saying Porter should accept the $1 million and call his mandatory. Good thing he didn't listen to boxing expert 65378 from Twitter. That's Lazy Lefty. Yeah, exactly. Everybody was saying, not everybody, but some people were saying, oh, because even look at Glazer back earlier this year. It's being said Sean Porter turned down $2 million versus Crawford, and many saying Porter should get a lot more. But if you ask those same people, would you pay to see the fight on pay-per-view, even if he was fighting Crawford, they'd say no, they wouldn't. The hypocrisy at its best. And he kept saying, oh, take your $1 million, $1.5 million, $2 million. Meanwhile, he got $4 million. So that is kind of funny how that works. If Crawford can't draw, why did Sean Porter take the B-side? Well, 60-40 was the mandatory thing. So if it goes to purse bid, it's 60-40. So that just, he's the champ. Porter's not known to be a great A-side. He's a solid B-side, but not a great A-side. So that's why he did it, dude. You know, that's why he did it. There's your answer right there. Pretty basic. If Wilder loses to Fury again, does he go down as an absolute bum? Think about it. His best win would be Luis Ortiz, and he would have lost three times to a guy he cherry-picked because he thought he was shot. What more would you say? So he cherry-picked him a second and third time? Is that what you're telling us? So you're saying Wilder cherry-picked, not the first time, but he cherry-picked him the second and the third time. So he cherry-picked him after getting his ass kicked in the second one. See, people say they want the best versus best, and everybody's afraid of the O. And then it doesn't mean you have to like Wilder. It doesn't mean you have to like his excuses after the fight. But the dude got beat up bad, and he wants more. Best fighting the best, you guys say it, but then when it comes out, and you say, oh, everyone's afraid of, you blame it on Mayweather, everyone's afraid of the O going. And then when the O goes, look how you treat the fighter. Is he now he's a bum? And he cherry-picked his way all three times he cherry-picked? How is a cherry-pick? He just got his ass kicked. How is he cherry-picking again? It's ridiculous, dude. It's so ridiculous, man. Some of the same writers that pushed the Foxes getting out of the boxing line all year are now trying to be the first to confirm Fox is committed through 2022. Boxing is wild. Yeah, that is funny. That is a funny one. I think one important key factor to the fight for Usyk is to start fast. Yes, he must start fast. I 100% agree with that. That's a great tweet. He is notorious slow starter. Yes, he is. If Usyk gives away those early rounds, as he's prone to do, it could be an uphill climb that he cannot overcome. I'm 100%, man. Jim Cross said that really, really well. He definitely said that well, man. That hit home. That was perfect, man. Totally right. Okay, I think we got one more, then we'll get out of here. Oh, this one's a doozy. The PBC fanboys, hella quiet tonight. The DAZN app fighter, Canelo, came over and bitch-slapped Mr. Slick. He's going to take your pay-per-view dollars, stop that idiot, and humble you all. Well done. This is what you asked for. No clowns. It had an American flag. So a DAZN fight. So Canelo's coming over. Somehow Canelo's the good guy in this. He's going to come over from – he's not a DAZN fighter, because if he was a DAZN fighter, this fight wouldn't be on Showtime. He's a free agent, okay? And he bitch-slapped Mr. Slick. That was kind of funny. But now he's going to take your pay-per-view dollars and humble us all. The PBC fanboys are going to be humbled because he's going to take our dollars and go back. So he's teaching us a lesson not to be on pay-per-view. But he was on pay-per-view for a good chunk of his career before. Where are we going? What are we doing here? What's going on? It's just like, really, dude? Oh, boy. Anyway, I'm going to get out of here. That was a long boxing Twitter segment for those who thought I was going to shut it down last week or the week before. I got some messages saying, you know, they like it long. Pause. There was just a couple in a row that were a little long is what I'm saying. So I like to do the Twitter segment. It's awesome. It's funny. I get some good feedback. But I don't want it to go too long. Anyway, I'm out of here. Enjoy the fights. We'll be back next week. Peace.
Once you become the world champion, I believe that